Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
We always look at our entire roster and we survey, hey, what do we need, right? What do we need to win? What do we need to go to the Super Bowl? What do we need to win a Super Bowl and a World Championship for this community? And in this case, we were pretty down in terms on the defensive side to compare to the offensive side and felt really good about offensively where we were at. We were able to add Joshua Palmer to the receiving core early on in free agency. And quite honestly, our numbers were down, just sheer numbers on the defensive side. So we're always looking to improve our team any way we can and feel pretty good about what we came out of the draft with.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott speaking with Matt Bove. Sheer numbers were down, happy what we came out with. And one thing about all this, I put a Twitter poll up and would expect it to lean the way that it has, which is, you know, the defense was down last year. What's the primary reason for that? And we could dig into that further. What's the number one reason the defense was down? Personnel, coaching / scheme, or if you want to go even finer, pass rush, or you could say third down defense. But why was the third down defense bad, right?
Right.
I think the number one answer could be a number of different answers that people out there have. If you want to give us a ring on that at 803-0550. But being there, you know, our sheer numbers were down. They had spent a couple picks in a row with their first pick going to the offense, right? Dalton Kincaid, Keon Coleman. And maybe that's one of the reasons that the Bills' defense started to drift a little bit is that transition, Joe. They didn't have the top end. We're talking blue chip talent. The idea is to go for blue chippers to fill in the holes when Hyde and Poyer left and Trey White became not Trey White. I mean, Benford really stepped into that spot. But,
yep,
that's, you know, right. It kind of fell apart a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, where were the areas they were bad? The third down defense, whenever they would kick into a lot of man coverage, especially, right, like at the end of the year, that became evident. Is it athleticism? Is it you just didn't have it? You know, one thing they got a lot of credit for having to rely on it might be the reason. What's something that this defensive staff gets credit for a lot? And rightfully so. It is they coach guys up that were not highly picked, like Cam Lewis over the years and Jamarcus Ingram and Damar Hamlin. I mean, really, that's a lot of the answer. Look at a lot of the players that are, especially in the secondary, that are being asked to play roles. There are a lot of undrafted guys in later picks. And I think when you have a defense full of guys like that, you're just not going to be as athletic. You're not going to have as many of the tools, maybe, as some of the stud high picks are going to have. So when I see that they're bad on third down, and I see Kansas City pick them apart when they wanted to play man coverage last year, knowing that Elam was one of those guys, and that's not true of him. He is the tools guy that didn't work out. I feel like it was an athleticism problem. And it was a problem that they just had too many of the, we coach this guy up to be responsible and know our system. You said too many of those guys playing at the same time.
And they did coach him up.
They did. Like, all of those individual, like, Cam Lewis as an individual story for the Bills is a good story. So is Ingram, even. And so is, I mean, Benford is a great story. Hamlin is, of course, there's other layers to him. But him playing as a six-round pick for two different years is a good story. But, you know, their lack of blue chippers and lack of top 100 talent guys. I mean, part of it is on defense. You've got a lot of players that are punching above their weight.
It's a little bit like, as we've talked about this, Do we talk about receiver? Yes. But this offseason, it's been talking about safety and defensive tackle quite a bit. And corner. Sure,
and
but
corner.
But just in terms of what they've tried to get.
Oh, okay.
Like
yeah.
They have drafted a bunch of corners. They've tried to get a bunch of corners.
Right.
They spent a first-round pick on Elam and Benford's that same year.
They traded for Douglas.
Yeah, like they've
made investment.
They really invested in... If we're looking at it, and this is one part where Brandon Bean is correct, you can't invest in everything. But we get to look at what you have spent your time on. What do you spend your money on? What do you spend your draft picks on? And Bishop, he's their first safety pick since Hamlin, right? And that's a second-round pick. I don't think there's another pick in there at safety. That's because they had...
But I think if you're not right, then maybe there's one guy
they
missing.
They had Poyer and Hyde. But what we saw from safety and from defensive tackle... As this thing started to drop down a bit. Like Taylor Rapp is a guy they brought in for cheap and then re-signed on a very modest deal. When we were talking about whether they could do something in the drafted safety, it was about how, I mean, Rapp's a nice player. They've coached him up. And then defensive tackle was the other spot where, man, that had been years of being borderline neglected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about the guys they had in free agency at defensive tackle, and it is just scrap heap. And last year's safety room was a little bit of that as well, with Mike Edwards being the guy they signed. They bring him in, and we thought he would start, and he never played. He left before ever playing. So it is a point about this coaching staff has coached up a defense, and now what this draft does is maybe give them some better horses to work with here, whether that's Landon Jackson. Speaking of Landon Jackson, Brett Coleman, Underdog Fantasy, and the Bootleg Podcast has a lot of great film stuff. He just did a series where he picked one player from every team's draft class.
Mm-hmm.
Who will be the biggest impact player of the draft class? And he picks Landon Jackson for the Bills to be the biggest impact player they've got. Power on the outside, he'll make a difference for them in the way that they play. So horses for McDermott, hopefully, you know, coach him up the way you coached up this last unit, and we'll see what the results are.
Isn't it fair to say, though, that a lot of the coaching up is, like, all the players that I reference and you have are in the secondary?
Yeah.
Aren't they?
They coach up the secondary quite a bit.
Which is McDermott's background,
right?
Is the secondary. Whereas the defensive line, the thing that Bean's invested the most in on that side of the ball, has been more of high picks that, you know, have been good, but nobody has really turned into... What did you even ask this question earlier in the week? Who's exceeded expectation?
Yeah, somebody brought up the point, what draft pick has exceeded their draft status?
Because I've got a lot of people in the secondary that have exceeded their expectation.
Benford.
Yeah, Benford has, and some of the undrafted guys we just talked about and others. Who on the defensive line has really exceeded their expectation? I think you have a hard time finding an answer to that question. They're good players, but... And Oliver is a top 10 pick. Greg Rousseau is very good. He was a first round pick. Maybe he has by a little bit. But it's different, I think, from that position grouping versus the others. And that's the position group that, you know, like when Bean is talking to Tyler Dunn yesterday and there are these comparisons being made to, like, okay, what do you want to really pull from the Eagles and pull from what the league is right now? I mean, Bean says there in that article yesterday, like, I want to go get Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow. I want to get after those guys. And that's easier said than done, but that's the thing they've been trying to do for the better part of 6 years, and they really still haven't been able to do it.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you want to join us, give us a ring. It's still draft chatter. Still looking back. Any other free agents out there that could fill holes? I don't know. Elijah Moore was one that was...
He filled one of the last holes left, I think.
Yeah. And he kind of stood out like... We'll talk about a draft board. Like, this guy was sticking out on the board. I thought Elijah Moore was sticking out on the UFA draft board. Keenan Allen's another one you might think he might find a spot eventually.
But he was way less of a fit for here.
Oh, for sure. For sure. They don't need a guy in the slot right now. Moore does a little bit of that with some vertical slot, of course, but he has outside stuff. So it was just a much better fit.
Yeah, I don't see anybody on the free agent market to me that it is any longer needed. What would be the position? What's the position where you feel like the Bills need one more guy? I thought that was receiver, and they got their one more guy.
Yeah.
So
you might say safety, but they signed Derek Forrest on a cheap deal, so he's been in the league. He's this year's Mike Edwards, is he not? A guy that's played for $1 million.
Yes. So look, right, another replacement level safety doesn't make sense. They don't need another veteran corner. They've already done that. And even like defensive line, I mean, they're totally done there. The numbers, there's so many numbers now at that position. That is the position I just kind of went through. Like, they haven't been good yet on the defensive line. They certainly are trying again. They've thrown a ton at that position. All 12 of those guys can't be on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it is going to come down to two or three of them, Sanders or Bosa or Hoyt or, you know, Deion Walker, Landon Jackson. It's going to take two or three of those guys becoming better than A.J. Epenesa. It won't just be good enough if you just added six A.J. Epenesas. Somebody's got to pop on that defensive line for all of this to come together and work.
803-0550. Mike in Charlotte. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, good discussion. In fact, I responded to your Twitter poll. I'm actually the idiot that missed the fact that you put both in the question, and I'm like, hey, where's the option for both? But that aside, I answered personnel is the issue, and as I'm sitting here driving, I'm wondering if it might be more coaching. And I'll say this specific to the defensive line, because I think if you were to really boil it down, I just don't think we've gotten enough clearly out of our defensive line, both on the edge and on the interior. And I'm curious to your thoughts on our ability to develop players at that position. So hear me out for a second, right? Like, I mean, we've had a track record, I think, of developing in the secondary, certainly at safety, at linebacker. But I think we struck out on the defensive line. And even Ed Oliver, to some extent, I mean, as a pick coming in the top 10, he's not lighting the world up, at that position. And I look at guys like Puna Ford and Tim Settle, who came here, couldn't get it figured out, couldn't get on the field, go somewhere else and have maybe better success. So with all of these young guys defensively, we can crap on McDermott all we want, but I just wondered, do we have the horsepower to develop players from a coaching perspective at those positions? Because if we don't, it doesn't matter what this draft, you know, looks like on paper. We're not going to get the most out of these guys looking forward. So just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Mike, the other thing about that, thanks for the phone call, is the timeline. Like, when will we expect, or when should we expect T.J. Sanders to be a big-time difference maker? And it's something we got into a little bit earlier in the week, where Dwayne Carter was a guy that we talked about this with Jerry O yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
we
Jerry Ostrowski was on the show. How Dwayne Carter came in, and he was the third-round pick the Bills got when they moved up from moving down in the Worthy trade. How early on it was, look at this guy. Nice pick, great spot. And then it kind of just drifted away by the end of the season, maybe a little bit like Keon Coleman, where whether it's rookie wall or it could be a lot of things, but by the end of the season, they didn't feel like they could play him. So
right.
Each player's on their own little journey, and can they develop guys, and do they have what it takes to get those right players in? You know, sometimes the expectation is a guy shows up and is amazing in his first five games and then disappears. Sometimes it takes a year for a guy to get there. Remember the legend of Kiko Alonso?
Mm-hmm.
Kiko Alonso was, what, five games, four interceptions, second place defensive rookie of the year, and then how quickly did he become kind of a punchline?
Well, I mean, he never played for the Bills again after that season, right? It was rookie year, and then
trade for McCoy.
Did he get hurt first and then get traded?
That's a good question.
He missed a season with an injury. I think he was still here when he missed a season, and then they traded him.
He tore his ACL, and then the Bills traded him.
But either way, he never played for the Bills again after that rookie season.
Which was a heck of a rookie season.
And he didn't become, what, right, legend of Kiko Alonso would have been, this is going to be like one of the premier linebackers in football for 10 years, and instead he went to Miami, got dogged by rookie Josh Allen.
Right. Yeah.
So.
But why do we think that about him? Because there were splash plays. He got the ball back.
Right.
He made plays.
Right.
And then from there, you know, nice career.
Yeah. Man, this obsession about them building this defensive line, too. Like, they did it on the offensive line.
Yep.
You know? Could it be a coaching thing on that side of the ball? I mean, how they operate, how they kind of the usage rates at that position. Aaron Cromer is credited a lot with, right, like coaching up the offensive line since he came here a couple years ago, and that lines up with their production, right? He gets here, they throw a little bit more at the position, and Spencer Brown gets healthy, and the, boom, there you go. One of the top offensive lines in football with the right coach and the right personnel. The defensive line, I don't know, like, tell me about their defensive line coach. I hear Aaron Cromer's name 10 times more than I hear about their defensive line coach. I always hear about and see the numbers on how they constantly rotate at the position. And that's even an exercise in you just don't have guys that are clearly better than the next level. You know what I mean? Like, how much of, hey, nobody plays more than 52% of snaps on the defensive line isn't just that they like to rotate at the position. It's that you've never had an elite player. You've never had T.J. Watt.
Right.
Where, guy's playing 90% because, what are you talking about? I'm going to take 30% of his snaps away and give them to Javon Solomon. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think defensive line, maybe I would want to blame both a little bit, but more so personnel.
Does Von not count, or does Von's 8 games show that that's what that would do? Because Von's 8 games before he got hurt was watching a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He would have 8 sacks in 8 games. And he
and
here's one thing you can do. And if you want to do this, you got 5 minutes today. What year?
8 sacks in 11 games.
8 sacks in 11 games before he tears his ACL.
Yeah.
Okay, 8 sacks in 11 games. That's on pace for like, what, a 12, 13 sack season?
Yeah,
roughly. The funny thing about that, maybe not funny, but you got 5 minutes today, you know what you should do? Go search Von's highlights from that season.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only did he have 8 sacks in those 11 games, and this is where your point about, you know, the blue chipper versus what do the coaches do to try to develop these players into great players.
Mm-hmm.
They were all game-changing plays. They were punching the ball out in New York against the Jets. That's the game. It might be the game that they lose to the Jets that year. They've got some stupid Jets losses in there. Or do they win with a comeback? But either way, Von is making third down stops and getting the ball back, and it is just routine. Did he have 2 sacks against the Rams in that opener?
Yep.
Close. He's
the guy who chases Mahomes out of the pocket when he throws a pick in Arrowhead.
Yeah.
And they win that game.
When they had.
He should have been the closer when he. Remember the. What is it? Is it 4th and 22 for Jefferson?
Yes.
Against Cam Lewis?
Yes.
Justin Jefferson? Why is it 4th and 22? Because on 3rd and 10, Von got to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that should have been another game he won for them.
That's right.
It became the dumbest loss you've ever seen.
Yeah, there's some players that are so good.
They were all important plays.
There's some players that are so good that, you know, they're going to fit in any scheme. And when they trade, when they signed him early on, that played out. And maybe if you were someone that didn't love that signing because of the age, maybe you thought he's going to get hurt, it won't last. And of course, it ultimately didn't last. How about this?
But what are the odds they're going to have that again this year?
Oh, you'd have to find somebody, maybe get a little lucky. I mean, Von's a 2nd overall pick. Like, I mean, he was supposed to be that his entire time. Like, that's not a surprise.
Well, that is what Bosa's supposed to be.
I mean, that's right.
He has not had the career that Von Miller has at all. Even when he's been healthy, he's been great, but Von was like one of the premier pass rushers ever. That's why, like, all these rookies on the defensive line, I respect that they're trying to build it, but I do wonder what kind of impact it could have in 1 year when you're relying on a lot of that to be rookies. But the guy at the top for this plan for at least 2025 is you do have a former top 3 pick that has had Pro Bowl seasons, that has had double-digit sack seasons, and you just got to know if he's going to be on the field or not. Because if he is, you know, wouldn't he be the most likely answer to, I've got a guy this year that's going to be doing all that. He's going to be making game-changing sacks at the end of games and pressures that force picks, that Bosa's the most likely player for this. 100% he's the most likely. Everyone else is a rookie. Except for Hoyt. I guess Michael Hoyt's not a rookie.
Right.
But he's suspended for 6 games.
Rob in North Tonawanda. Hey, Rob, good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. I was listening to you guys earlier about Devin Levi and that, about, like, I look at, like, a lot of similarities between him and Ryan Miller's early career in that, because I remember, like, how we started Ryan Miller in a couple games after his college career, he struggled in that. But then when we sent him down to Rochester, like, at least with the lockout, at least he had a chance to even start a lot more and down in Rochester. But you notice that after his time in Rochester, it was like he became amazing. He became, you know, where we could make Marty Baron expendable, or Mekonor an expendable, where you could put like a veteran backup in that. And I like, and I do like Levi watching him, like, since he started here. It's like he's in position. He seems like more calm under pressure, and where it seems to me with Luukkonen, he's just, I like his game, but I just, it's time for to move on from him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is different. Yeah, the Miller-Levi comparison is there. The thing about Miller, though, is he didn't become the starter until he's 25 years old. So you got the patience for that? Because Levi's 23. And sometimes it takes that long. Allmark didn't become the full-time starter until he was 25.
Would Miller have done it at 24 without a lockout?
Probably. Okay, yeah.
Maybe.
Probably. Right, he didn't have that opportunity. He had played 18 games before 05-06 and didn't necessarily go well in the 800s for save percentage, which is what Levi, I think, is for his NHL career.
Right.
So, no, I mean, what that is the right comparison in that just because Levi's played 30 NHL games and they haven't necessarily gone great, I don't take that as any discouragement that he's not going to become a top starter in the league. So,
803-0550. Thanks, Rob, for the phone call. 1-888-550-2550. Fifth-year options around the league. I just said the other day on the fifth-year option, and a small note that the Cowboys did not pick up the fifth-year option for Kyir Elam. They traded for him.
They had the opportunity.
They had the opportunity to pick up the fifth-year option. They did not.
Yeah. I saw a long list of guys that didn't get picked up. I also saw reshared the so Cole Strange, the guard from the Patriots,
yep,
didn't have the fifth-year option.
And
the video clip of Sean McVay belly laughing when the Patriots picked him in the first round.
Where was he picked? What number pick?
He was number... He was in the 20s.
Okay. I have a stat of the day for you. Let's get to the stat of the day, because it's about the fifth-year option and something we think about the draft. And this is also going to be something...
29, by the way.
Perfect. He fits right into this. This actually, Elam was taken 25th. They traded up 25 for
23rd.
Him. 23rd, okay.
I got from that year. 23rd for Elam, 25 okay. for Linderbaum, 27 for Devin Lloyd. Strange.
Linderbaum, we went over yesterday, is a case of the offensive lineman 50-year option, yep, being bad for centers. So there's
Lewisine, 32, by the way, also.
Okay, safety Lewisine. There's going to be some noise in this. But, and I wonder if we'll eventually get to this spot. Because heading into most drafts, we did this. The Bills are picking at 30. Will someone want to trade up the 30? If there's a quarterback, they could take the quarterback and get the fifth-year option. And Warren Sharp put this out. So every year the talk is the end of the first round, teams will come back in to get a fifth-year option on a player. Now, the way that works, for anybody out there that might not know, it's just this. Your first-round draft picks are under contract for 4 years. You can take an option to have it be a fifth year. Mm-hmm. The Bills... They did that with Rousseau. Then you can re-sign him.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it with Rousseau. They could have done it with Rousseau, right?
The fifth year option?
Are they?
Yeah, the last year they did, didn't they?
Okay, that's
he
right.
was going into his fifth year option season, and they signed him before he even got to.
That's
it.
Right. He never played on the fifth year option. Sorry, let me start again. After 3 years,
yeah,
you decide: are you picking up the option for the fifth year? The player plays the fourth, and then the fifth year option is there. But sometimes you negotiate that away,
right?
For instance, next year the Bills will have a decision on Dalton Kincaid. Does he play on the fifth-year option? Do you give that there as a placeholder? It's kind of like a mini franchise tag for your draft picks.
Yep, for your first-round draft picks.
Yes, first-round only. Anyway, Warren Sharp, since the creation of this, the fifth-year option, 12 years ago, there have been 59 players selected between 28 and 32.
Okay.
There's going to be 1 year like a voided pick in there. So that's...
Okay.
31% of the players picked 28 or later get a fifth-year option.
That's it?
That's it. 31%.
That's not a lot.
Yeah, you're less than 1 in 3 chance if you're a guy taking 28th to 32 to get your fifth-year option. Again, there could be a couple different things in here. Why? It could be because teams take positions that are a little less savings on that.
Right.
Maybe they sign them. But I found it interesting. It was only 31% because we do treat it quite often like it's, oh, you have this advantage built in, you're going to use this, right? And players right there are not likely to get the fifth-year option.
Yep. Less than I thought. You still do have the option, though. You still do have, and it, 31% means that it does happen. Versus, of course, the beginning of the second round, it would be 0% because you just don't even have it available to you. But the point about the position, that's why Tyler Linderbaum didn't get franchise tagged.
Right.
He's great, but the center thing costing 20. And that will be when we have this discussion more so as the season plays out and after year three, that will be part of Kincaid's debate on that, is that his position, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm pretty sure tight end, isn't tight end one of the more affordable positions for fifth-year option?
Probably.
Because the salaries are lower for that position group than for a lot of others.
Yeah.
It's still top five for the position, but it's not like Kittle just got the most for a tight end. Isn't it like $19 million a year?
Yeah, it's not as expensive as some other positions.
No.
It's catching up. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Sam Monson of the Check the Mic podcast coming up at 9 o'clock talking some draft classes with us. He had some interesting things to say about the Bills and their model and you know what they're doing on offense and how it's worked and how it might continue to work. So we'll talk about that with him at 9 o'clock here on WGR.